Excuse me, I'm just moving furniture. Good morning, everyone. I'm Val, and I'm speaking to you this morning. Having listened to those readings, I would absolutely love to unpack them, but there's only one of them I'm talking about this morning. As you'll have gathered from the newsletter that you were given when you came to church today, we're about to start a new phase in our biblical stewardship program. This year it's Biblical Stewardship 366. It's a leap year. We have an extra day to be good stewards. I'm sure you know by heart now that we define stewardship as using the gifts that God has entrusted to us to work with God to make the world a better place, and that Jesus called this better place the kingdom of God on earth. Ourselves, our lives, our very being are all gifts from God. And if we want to do a good job of stewardship, we must look after ourselves. In the fall, we looked at caring about our physical selves, our bodies. Our new focus will be caring for our mental and emotional selves. And later in the year, we'll be focusing on spiritual wellness. We need to combine these facets of who we are, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual, so they work together to create the wholeness that God planned for each of us. After all, if we are not going to work as God's hands, feet, voice, and heart here on God's earth, who will? Whilst Jonathan and I were planning this phase, I told him of some of my own struggles with mental health, and he suggested that I share some of it with you. This is not meant to be a pity party, but it is meant to give you some idea what mental health issues can look like, and how, when things go wrong, we can help ourselves or seek help. It's also not really a sermon. It's a bit more of a witness talk. A further urge to speak came when I read today's scripture in order to prepare this morning's prayers. I'm referring to the passage from Deuteronomy that I asked Jonathan to put up on the screen behind us. I've set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Choose life. God's exhortation is without any qualification. It's not choose life sometimes or choose life if you feel like it. It's just choose life. This is so important to our Jewish friends that they use it as a toast. Instead of cheers, they hold up their glasses and say, L'chaim, to life. Now to my story. I do have other stories, but this one starts one snowy morning in 1954 when I was either 11 or 12, I don't quite remember. I was sitting on my father's lap, and my mother was sitting across from me with my sister on her lap. Joan and I both wanted to go out and play in the snow. You didn't get much snow in England, and this was very rare. But my father had something to tell us. He said very calmly, I'm leaving because I'm going to live with Auntie Irene. Then he added, now you can go and play. It's a long time ago and the words are still clear in my mind. Then he got his bags and left. And I think that was the last day I was a child. My mother collapsed in a paroxysm of crying. We tried praying, but that wasn't something we usually did, so it didn't really help. But I felt numb, and the rest is a blur, and I don't remember it. Our predicament was dire. Like most mothers in the 1950s, my mom didn't have a job, so she had no income. And she was also chronically depressed. We lived in low-income rented accommodation, and to those who know England, know that is called a council estate and is considered very low class. My father was reluctant to give us any money. We even had problems getting enough money to buy food. And things only got worse. We had minimal help from anyone. My mother's parents were long dead, and my father's mother was so horrified and ashamed by the whole situation, she would only see us occasionally. In one of my rare visits, the trauma I was living with was made worse by guilt and shame. In order to excuse her son, my grandma told me that my parents had really loved each other very much until they had children. Now, I was the older of the two children. I was born first, so obviously I was to blame. I learned to understand that everything was my fault, and I kept this to myself. My life was stained by this profound but secret guilt until I was a middle-aged adult with my own children. I never questioned this understanding until I was taking university classes in the late 70s to turn my English teaching certificate into a degree. And in one of my counseling classes, I heard that many children of divorced parents blame themselves, even though that isn't true. Today, such children will get help. But my secret feeling of guilt and shame was so ingrained that I couldn't change them or ask for help, even if there was any. For me, there were many other serious consequences of that snowy day so long ago. Mum was seriously depressed and still had to work 10 hours a day, 5.5 days a week. This meant that as a young adolescent, housekeeping, cooking, laundry, and so forth fell to me. I had no spare time. I constantly worried about such things as power bills and rent. At school, I had no friends. I got a scholarship and went to a school where a lot of girls like me didn't go. I was isolated, teased, and bullied, largely because we were poor and I came from the wrong sides of the tracks. I was never invited to birthday parties or sleepovers. Even when I started dating, a boy would see where and how I lived, and there were few second dates. I grew up with a profound sense of not being acceptable, because my parents were divorced, and that was my fault. Although my teachers were often lights in dark places and encouraged me, there was no real sense that children like me needed help. We should just cheer up and get on with things. Eventually, I left home to go to college, which incidentally was paid for by my local education department, who even paid for my clothes. And things did improve. I didn't know it then, but I do now by looking back, that the God I had never known, for some reason, decided to parent me. That, though, is another story. I'd gladly tell it if you're interested, but not right now. But somehow the people I needed entered my life. A headmistress who believed in me and told me so. The principal, a tough, rugby-playing, very tall man, and he was the principal of the first school I taught at, showed me what it meant to be a Christian. With the help of people like that, I gradually gained confidence. My miserable youth and young adulthood taught me some useful things, though. I learned to work hard and not need supervision. I had been let down by people so many times that I determined to be reliable and not to do to others what they had done to me. I also learned to plan ahead to avoid problems. Now, this was generated by the fear of what would happen if I missed something rather than planning good things. I married and had children, but after 37 years and my husband's near death from cancer, he unexpectedly left me. And that's a story that many of you know. This was the worst rejection yet, and this time I just wanted to die. Stress tends to be cumulative. Everything I've told you about, plus much more, came flooding back. I could neither eat nor sleep, nor could I see any future. But this time I had a solid relationship with God, and the answer to my endless prayers was always, get help. Firstly, I decided not to keep my agony secret. I told my story to anyone who would listen, and that helped more than you can imagine. Probably drove people crazy, but it helped me. My sister made an appointment for me with my doctor and told me if I didn't show up at doctor's surgery in half an hour, somebody would come looking for me. So I saw my doctor and got medication and a once a week visit. Can you imagine that? Once a week for a year. I also found a wonderful counselor. She helped me cope with my current situation and also the past situations. And I saw her monthly for 3 years, paid for by my health plan and Alberta Health. Because I had told people what was happening, I had lots of wonderful cards and phone calls and visits. Throughout it all, my children, now adults, were wonderful supports. My daughter called me daily. She was living in Calgary by then. She called me daily and made me keep Ensure both in my fridge and in my desk drawer at work because she knew I wasn't eating. My employer was more helpful than I could possibly imagine. By that time, I was a school principal and I just wanted to take medical leave and they wouldn't let me. Instead, they hired someone to take my place, got the vice principal to do my job, and told me not to spend life on my acreage, but to come into work if I possibly could, and if I needed to sleep, to go to the medical room. Can you imagine that? I don't know if they told the school board. Throughout the whole ordeal, including the old blame I felt for my parents' divorce, I kept a daily journal. I wrote heartfelt letters to God. I still have these. And this is a practice I'd recommend to anybody who's finding life difficult. And then there's the part that St. A's played in my healing. I'd known Bob Peel since before he was a priest. He sat with me through the 10 hours of Brian's life-threatening surgery. He was present with support immediately when Brian told me he was leaving. And he listened to me through many meltdowns. So when I needed a new church family, I sought out Bob and found this wonderful place. Now, secretly, I call this the Lourdes of Fulton Place. It's a place where God, with your help, heals people, and not just me. Even when Bob retired, I found great help in Sheila. Do you remember Sheila, our interim priest, Sheila Hagen-Bloxham? She had amazing counseling skills. It was Sheila, during one of our many meetings, who helped me to recognize my overwhelming fear of rejection and how I'd coped with it. She pointed out that I'd made a point of developing certain skills so people would keep me around because they wanted the skills. and that way I felt I'd be safe. Once Sheila showed me this, it was so clear. Even as a child, I could draw well, so people who wouldn't ask me to their birthday parties would get me to do their drawings for them that they would then claim as their own. I'm a good planner. Well, that planning paid off, and I have been on more planning committees than you can ever imagine. I also learned to do what I say I'm going to do, and that's been helpful too. Now, Sheila's words seem to reconcile the whole thing. What I couldn't do alone, she finally enabled me to do. Now, I'm nearly 78, and with all that help, I finally understood myself and can accept myself and not carry guilt for things that are not my fault. I'm finally able to choose life, even if it has taken most of my life. And I will use that life, the gift of the God I know and love, in any way I can. So what have I learned about mental health? Bad things, including illness, happen. God cares and will place the people I need in my life. God will urge me to get help when needed. I should act on that urge. Help is always available from friends, people you can talk to, people I spoke to over and over again about my situation, just people that I knew. There are counselors and psychologists. I took advantage of them. I know I didn't take advantage of them. I went to see them. Maybe I did take advantage of them, who knows. But those are the professionals who know, and who know when it's time to get professional help. Our clergy are wonderful resources. I mean, apart from Barb and Sheila, I've spoken to Jonathan many times. Now, during the next few weeks, during this part of the stewardship program, we're going to be talking about these kinds of things, how to identify problems and what to do about them. We're not going to be bringing a psychologist in, but we're going to try and see what we can do. And remember, God told us that there is life and prosperity, death and adversity. Therefore, we should choose life, and it is a choice. And the reason is so that you and your descendants may live, loving the Lord your God, obeying him, holding fast to him, for this is life to you. Nothing I've told you is a secret and hasn't been told to other people, and I'm happy to talk about it. Lachem, to life. Thank you. I said it wasn't a sermon.